Here we go again. Bob McCown, John Shannon.
Hello, Robert.
So here's an interesting statistic. I don't know if you've seen this. The voting for the Major League Baseball All-Star Game has commenced. And as of 2 days ago, three quarters of the Toronto Blue Jays infield will be at the game. And two of them will start. Guerrero is number one in voting overall.
Well, he should be.
First base. Semien is number one in voting at second base. And Bichette is number two in voting at shortstop.
Wow.
Leaving, of course, the essentially vacant and still to be announced third base job open for the Toronto Blue Jays. But I'll tell you, not only is this not really a surprise, but I mean, what is Semien? 28, 29 years old?
Yeah.
Guerrero's like 22. Bichette, I think, is 22, 23, something like that. That's a pretty good foundation for a ball club. I mean, they're not a finished product by any stretch of the imagination. They need a third baseman and they need arms.
Yep. But
a whole lot of organizations, like 29 of them, would like to be where the Toronto Blue Jays are in terms of their infield.
Pretty heady stuff. You know, and the Guerrero one is that, I think that's an easy one. When you think of, you go on to MLB.com and you look at, slugging percentage, you look at home runs, first guy to
virtually 20, everything.
Everything. I mean, it's right now, it's he and Mike Trout, right? It's he and Mike Trout, everything Mike Trout this, Vladdy Guerrero that. The Semien one is such a great story, Bob.
Sure it is.
When you think that playing not his regular position, playing out of position, hitting the ball as well as he has, I just now hope that he becomes, and this is the optimist in me, I hope he becomes a long-term Blue Jay as opposed to just a single season rental.
I don't see how they let him go if he wants to stay. Do you?
Yeah. No. Well, if he wants to stay. But here, let's face it, though, Bob, one of the frustrations for a Blue Jay fan is that he's not played one game in the home stadium. Not
well,
one. That may change. That may change his philosophy wanting to play, because you're going to have to go back and play on turf.
Well, no, there's some truth in that. But I think we're still, I don't know if we're confident, but we're at least hopeful that there will be some games at Rogers Center this year before all is said and done. I think the border's going to open up. I think they're going to be able to play games that we don't know for sure. But he'll, and the guy's played in the major leagues for several years. He's played probably,
I know,
what, 20, 30 games at Rogers Center. So he knows what it's like.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. And this team is, I mean, look at what they did on the weekend in Boston and how many long balls they hit. They are offensively so much fun to watch. It's going to, when the border does open, we get to go to the stadium, it is going to be just a blast.
Not a finished product, as I said, but getting there.
I don't mind teams winning 16-4.
Or 18-4, as the case may be the other day.
Well, yeah.
Our guests today are an intriguing couple. They are familiar to everybody. Ray Ferraro, longtime broadcaster with TSN, former NHL player. And one of the best female hockey players ever.
Oh,
Cammy Granato. Yeah.
Hall of Famer.
Yeah. Who is now a scout with the Seattle Kraken, who have yet to take the ice. They are husband and wife. And I believe this will be one of their first appearances together on a program. And we are pleased that they will join us after these messages. We are back. It's Bob McCown. It's John Shannon with the program for a Tuesday. We are in the midst, as we know, of the Stanley Cup semifinal. Is that how we describe it now?
That is correct. There's no conferences, Bob. There's no conferences. No East, no West, no Clarence Campbell, Prince Will. Even though, as we talked with Bill on Friday, they are going to give the trophies away at the end of this round, but there's no East, West. It's called the National Hockey League Stanley Cup semifinals.
What a mess. They're giving away a trophy, but they're not acknowledging that there are even conferences. I don't get it. But
you don't have to.
That's exactly right. I don't have to. So therefore, I'm not even going to try. Here are a couple of people who know way more than I, and probably more than you, Shannon, about all things hockey. Ray Ferraro with TSN, Cammy Granato, a scout with the new Seattle franchise yet to be launched in the National Hockey League, and a couple as well. And you were saying you're not sure this may be the first podcast, for lack of a better term, that you guys have done together at the same time?
Podcast, I'm almost certain it's the first.
I think yeah. so. It might be.
I don't know that anybody's really thought that the two of us together would be a great idea. So
apparently the producer thought it would be a good idea. I don't understand either, but apparently the producer thought, hey, you know what? They got an interesting story. When you think about gold medals and NHL games and, you know, do you diagram plays at the dinner table or what do you do?
I would say we've always discussed the game. Of course, it's been such a central point of both our lives, but since Cammy's become a scout and now is watching the league at a level far deeper than, you know, more than just as fans as we watched it before, like her opinion on players is more detailed. I'm finding out I'm wrong way more than I used to be about players. So
what is that? Is that in hockey or at home?
Oh, no, home. I'm in second place, I think. Fair to say. No, she's not even going to disagree, because I'm so far in second place, it's not even close. But it's really cool and really fun to debate what we're watching, like what just is going on in the game. Because as I said, she's watching it now at a level that, of course, you weren't before, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, we talk hockey. I mean, it's always been fun for us to project players or just talk about hockey because we know. It is definitely at a different level now that I'm dissecting things the way I am with my job. It's been a lot more debates and just conversations.
Do you want to tell them the first time we did this and I was so wrong?
Well, there were a few.
No, but but in Chicago.
I like to think those as big victories when I am right. But this one I think would have been obvious to other people. It
wasn't to me.
It wasn't to Ray, but he didn't think Patrick Kane was ready. We watched him at rookie camp and I'm like, this kid's going to be a star. And he's like, no way. And I was like, he's
because Jonathan Taves was at the same camp. They both came to camp the same year. I said, wow, Taves is a man among boys here. He's ready to play. And she kept, like, her eye kept going to Kane. And she's like, he's ready. I'm like, look at him. He's 160 pounds. He can't play. And then he won the rookie of the year. And, you know.
Yeah. I mean, that one, I mean, I can take credit for, but I mean, anyone is Patrick Kane. So I don't know.
Cammy. As broadcasters, we watch games differently than normal people watch games. We're looking for certain things. I'm intrigued, Cammy, have you noticed a change in the way you watch games now that your job is to do that specifically, not as a fan, but as a scout?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, when typically watching a game, I would watch the puck. I'd follow the puck and follow the play. But now as a scout, when you're looking at a certain guy, you have to look at them off the puck as well. And so it's very different. I mean, it's not different in the way the game's played. Like, you're still seeing what you've seen, but now you're dissecting it to a greater level and you're trying to watch them away from the play or just in certain situations over time, consistency, attitude, everything. You're just watching in a whole different level, but it's still very, very much natural because I watch so many hockey games. It was a really nice transition to jump in. I think the biggest learning curve for me was, first of all, learning the players I didn't know well, and learning a lot of them, and then also learning how to file reports, what our GM and assistant GMs want, and just kind of learning that learning curve was what I knew I had to be patient with. And I've had a lot of reps over the last year and a half, so it's been really interesting and really fun. I'm really enjoying it, actually.
Cammy, how do your discussions with Ray differ than your discussions with your brothers?
Well, with Ray, I would like to think that we have more of an equality. With me, I'm a fifth sibling. So I don't know if anyone is a younger sibling and you understand where you are in the pecking order. You know, with my family, when you get back with your family, no matter how old you are, you just fall right back into who you are as a sibling, right? So,
yeah.
You know, my voice is a bit muted with my brothers, but there's certainly been some great discussions with my brothers over the last year and a half with, you know, Don's in the NHL and Tony's was coaching in the NHL and now in college, so he knows the younger players. We've had some awesome discussions over players, and it's been really fun as a scout now to talk to them because it's a lot deeper of a conversation. I'm really listening to what they have to say just as information for me. So it's been great.
How has this pandemic impacted your ability to watch and enjoy the game? Because I think it might be different for you two because of your background and history than maybe for the average person. Ray, I'll throw it to you first.
Well, Bob, I've been to, I was at the World Junior in Edmonton. So I was at the games there. I did two games in Calgary, one in Edmonton, one in Ottawa. And that's all I've been at site this year. Everything else is in studio. Man, it's so hard to keep your energy no matter what's going on in the game. It's a real challenge to keep your energy, to stay connected to the game, to things happening. You know, your gut tells you something's happening at one end of the ice. You can't see it.
Yeah.
So you're like there. We finally, well, not finally, but we came up with, you know, in football, they call it, you know, the all 22, but here we're using it like an all 12 camera. So you can see the whole ice and you can catch things off the side, like a slash maybe over there or too many men on the ice or the goalie leaving, but it's so much, everything's muted. Like you're in this, I'm in a room, basically it's a closet. There's a return, a feed to the game. There's the studio guys can see me. I'm looking at a camera. I mean, there's nothing else to look at. And it's nowhere near as much fun. I don't think our insight can be as deep because you just can't see what's going on a lot of the time. I think the guys, technically, they've done an amazing job, like getting this stuff to what we see. For the broadcasters, there's just going to be, you're going to bump your head up on the ceiling of what you can see and what you can feel when you're sitting in a sound room somewhere.
Interesting, because you really, as you say, you really haven't left Vancouver. So that means the pandemic, the both of you have been under the same roof a heck of a lot longer and more this year than ever before. So what's that been like?
Do you want to start or do you want?
Yeah, it's good. It was honestly, we were quite surprised. I think the biggest thing that I noticed with Ray traveling so much, and I didn't realize, I don't think we both realized like how much toll that took on him to travel that much, and how when he'd get home, a lot of it was just recovering before he could get back on the road again because he was so tired from traveling. And when he started to just, you know, be home for, we didn't know how many months, it was like he could recover. He didn't have to feel like he was always chasing that fatigue. And we, you know, in our marriage we're used to the travel, but now we're home together and we were like, wow, we really had some like incredible time together. We learned different things about each other. We learned in the household how we share duties now, which he's done all the laundry in a year. I haven't done any, like, it's amazing.
Attaboy.
We did get in sync. I think we're kind of ready. I mean, at this point, you get to the year point, I think that's where we're both itching. Like it's, you know, we bump heads a little bit, you know, more so lately where we're both like, we just want to go back to normal, like everyone else. So it's been a silver lining, I think, in all that's gone on, was having him home, especially even with all the kids, it's been great as well.
So actually, go ahead. So Cammy, what were your travel? We all know what Ray's travel is going to be. Like he's going to be, you know, super triple platinum elite. What's your travel going to be like when you think that you're going to be back to normal?
I think it's going to be the Western Conference and probably the Pacific Division, if that's where we're, back to. So I don't think the travel, it's not going to be a lot. I think, you know, with where I am with Seattle, a lot of the games, I'm going to do all the games in Vancouver. We really haven't visited sort of what my travel will look like moving forward. We will get to that sort of after we're through all this other stuff that we're focused on. But it's, I'm not going to be traveling, you know, 4 days a week like Ray is. It's just, it wouldn't work for the family. So I'll probably be maybe here and there. I'll be out in some of the other Canadian cities, but we'll see.
I would say from my perspective, I've, you know, cause always being in and out of the house, like things happen and get done and you never have any idea how they get done. They just get done. So I've had a greater appreciation for all that Cammie does as mom. And now she's also got about three projects on the go, plus this scouting thing. Like, it's amazing how much stuff is getting done. And now I just drop into the middle of it. The most frustrating part is I want to know what the hell's going on with the Kraken, and I get nothing. I walk into her office, and I've told this story before, guys. It's not even an exaggeration. She'll either turn her computer or close it as I walk in. And I'm not even coming in to see anything. I'm just coming in because it's in the kitchen and close. So people are like, well, who do they like on this team? I have no idea. When they were naming the team, I was grilling her for about a week. Like, you have to know. You have to know the name. And she's like, I don't. I still don't believe her that she didn't know, but she wouldn't. There was nothing. I had nothing. I had as much as the guy down the block, you know. So it's been pretty interesting to see the work that goes in, the work we both have to do, and that try to keep the house busy, because our boys are 14 and 11. Landon, my older son, just got back from Germany a month ago where he was playing. And my other son, Matt, lives next door. So we've got Cammie's got the grandkids on her lap half the time too. So it actually would have been a decent reality show this last year, I think.
I'll bet. since we brought it up, one of the intriguing things about the naming of a team, it takes a while for us to get comfortable with the new name, no matter who it is. If there's an expansion team in any sport, they come up with a name and you go, what? That doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. And the Kraken, I got to admit, was one of those. How are you with it, Cammie? I mean, I'm sure now we're all kind of familiar with it. It flows off the tongue a little more easily. But at the beginning, I thought that was one of the craziest names I'd ever heard.
Yeah, no, from the start, I really liked it. I think I there were a couple names that I was hoping it was, and that was one of the ones in the mix. I just think it's so unique. People think it's non-traditional hockey, but, you know, it's this, the uniqueness of the Seattle organization is real. I mean, it's a wonderful, just the way it's built, the leadership, the ownership, and then to have a name like that that's so different and really, I don't know. It resonates with me. I like it. I think the kids were all split, I think, but now they love the logos, or the grandkids love the logo. And I liked it from the start.
See, you know, the name I could never figure out, and I still don't know that I love, is the Minnesota Wild.
Well, see, there you go.
Like, I'm like, they don't even, you can't have a mascot like of a blustery wind. Like, you know, there's got to be something to it. At least like the mascot's going to be a Kraken. It's going to be a feared sea animal of some sort or whatever. Yeah. Like, I can get the marketing to that. The Wild, I just, it never connected for me. And still, really, quite frankly, still doesn't.
Living in Vancouver, and Ray, you're a BC boy, born and raised. Some of the good people come out of that way. You know, that's nice to see. But the Vancouver Seattle thing is going to be fun to watch. That we I don't think we see it a little bit in Major League Soccer, but I'll tell you what, Canucks Kraken is going to be a circus, don't you think?
I'll tell you why I think so, because after living here for 20 years and seeing the way the Canucks fan base feels about their team, they're very protective yet agitated about their team.
Always.
And so here's going to come this shiny new team down the road, new uniforms, new name, new coach, unbelievable building, like spectacular. Like when people see this thing, I've just seen the schematics and a few of the, oh my gosh, it's going to be amazing. So there'll be this built-in, oh, look what they've got, but we're better. We've like, it's not even going to take a game for it to feel like a rivalry. Lots of times you got to build into that thing. No chance. Like, I think people are going to go up and down I-5 to, it's 3 hours to go watch the game. Like, I think it's going to be awesome.
I don't deny that. I mean, I spent enough time in Vancouver. I understand the relationship between Seattle and Vancouver, although they haven't really had much of a rivalry in any sport, really. Soccer, I guess, a little bit, but I also caution you guys that, you know, a long time ago when the Buffalo Sabres came into the NHL, you could have made that case about Toronto and Buffalo. Geographically, right. Pretty close, right across the border, an hour and a half drive, even less than Seattle to Vancouver. And that rivalry never really materialized, I guess, principally because the two teams rarely were good at the same time. Don't you think that's really going to be the focal point of the rivalry if it materializes between Vancouver and Seattle?
Maybe in year two or three, right? I think right off the hop, you got something.
Of course.
You're right. If both teams stink, then there's nothing to be rivals about. Like, I remember when I was in Hartford, when I was with the Islanders, we felt that the Rangers and the Bruins were our biggest rivals. And oh man, it meant so much. And then when I went to the Rangers, I realized they didn't look at the Islanders the same way. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't the same. They were like big brother to little brother. The Bruins, they just like kicking the Oilers around like that. But for us, we were like, if we can beat the Bruins, our fans went crazy. So if the teams can be competitive, sure, that's going to help. If they, you know what I hope? I hope they get into a spot where they're fighting for a playoff spot against each other. Like that will draw, that will root in or rivet in the rivalry. Like when they become true competitors for one thing.
Yeah, you got to have a little hatred in order for a rivalry to really exist. And usually hatred is fostered by defeat. If the other team beats you in a big game or a big series, it's a lot easier to hate them. If the games are, the more consequential the games are, the more the hatred grows. Mm. We want to talk a little bit about what's going on now in the National Hockey League with both of you guys, and we'll do that when we come back after these messages. It's Bob McCowan. It's John Shannon with husband and wife, Ray Ferraro and Cammy Granato are with
hey,
us.
Hey, before we talk about the Stanley Cup playoffs,
yeah,
you know, Ray's talked about Cammy as the scout, but you guys were both broadcasters at the same time. Who was giving whom advice? I remember Cammy was working for NBC at the time, and Ray was, I guess you might have been with Sportsnet still, or were you at TSN by then?
I was with doing the Oilers broadcasts, and then I started to do a little bit of NBC as well. We ended up at the Torino Olympics at the same time. Cammy was doing the women's side. I was doing the men's side studio, and Bill Clement was the host. And so right. Bill had one of us or the other wandering in and out for about 20 straight days. But Cammy started doing this, and, you know, she should talk about this, but they just came up with the person between the glass, inside the glass.
Right.
And so they just jammed her in between the glass. Like nobody even had an idea of how that was supposed to work. You couldn't even really ask anybody because nobody knew. Nobody knew, like, was it a good thing? Was it a bad thing? How was it going to work? Were you supposed to interact with the players
Well, Kemi, was it a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, I mean, it was one of those things where I wasn't seasoned, but yet, and I was super excited. There was this new in the glass position where we were like right on top of the action, you know, benches on both sides, no glass in between. You're hearing all the stuff that you hear down low. It was incredible. A big adrenaline rush, but now I'm trying to learn and I'm on a major broadcast. Oops, sorry.
Just stepped on the dog.
Sorry, I'll say it again. Yeah, I'm trying to learn, and I'm on a major broadcast. So there was this desire to get better quicker, but I needed reps. So it was an interesting situation for me to be in. I never went back and watched the tapes. I mean, I was such a rookie and so raw, but I did enjoy it. Ray was very helpful. I look back at that time and it went quick because I ended up getting pregnant, I think maybe 6 or 8 months into my job. And then I took a leave. And when I came back, they had cut the amount of our team, the third group for financial reasons, I think was what they said. I didn't go back and work after that, in between benches, but it was really some great memories, like some playoff games that I got to be in the middle and just, you know, all of a sudden the mic, you know, they're throwing it to you. You're doing an interview and never done it before. So it was definitely out of my comfort zone. Something that I would have needed more reps to get better at, but I just, after having kids, I didn't get back into it too much. He's really, really good at it and he's really helpful. But I don't know if it was sort of for me to go back. I think for something like I'm involved in right now with scouting is more my style than broadcasting, just personally.
Do you give him any advice about his broadcasting career?
No, I mean, I think it's more input than anything. It's more, you know, if I know
feedback
and, yeah. You know, he's so good at what he does that there's no, it's more about admiration, to be honest. And it's come natural to him and his brain. What I've realized actually through COVID was like, you have a photographic memory of that. I didn't know this. Like he can literally take a play and he'll know 4, 5, 6 steps before what happened because it's snapshots in his head. And it's amazing for what he does because he can regurgitate that then. And so I'm learning a lot from him about that.
Tammy left out one thing, guys. One of the games she was doing between the benches was between St. Louis and Colorado. And there's this unbelievable picture of her brother, Don, who was on the bench with St. Louis, and her brother, Tony, was on the bench with Colorado, and she's standing in the middle of them. It's during the play, like it's not a posed picture.
Oh, yeah.
And it's really a pretty awesome.
That's probably one of the highlights of my career in any hockey event I've ever done is being in the middle of my two brothers for a game. It couldn't get any, but my dad's right behind us, like 5 rows up. It couldn't get any better than that. Like it was just amazing.
So Cammy's in hockey management, Ray, why aren't you?
Probably a couple of reasons. One was I always thought I was going to be a coach. And then just before my last year in Atlanta, I got divorced. And the coaching train, of course, is a transient one. And so my ex-wife was going to move to Vancouver, which is how I ended up in Vancouver. So I was going wherever they were going because the kids were 13 and 10 at the time. And so to start coaching, which was really my focus at that time, I would have had to, you know, you get, say you're good at it, then you got to move and you get good at it there. Then you got to move again. I couldn't do that. And then as I got into my career a little bit, the broadcasting career, I didn't make a lot of connections when I played, you know, I don't know. I just wasn't connected. I did my thing. I think there was probably, but there was some selfishness to the way I viewed my career. Like if I don't score, I'm out of the game. And so everybody else became a foe because I needed to outscore guys on my team to stay. That's how I viewed it. Like how myopically I viewed my career. And so when it time came, I wanted to get into management. John, Bob, I'm telling you, I wanted to do it. I wanted to be a manager. I wanted to grow my way in the game. I think I would be really good at it, but that ship it never really came to port, but it's gone now. You know, like I'm not leaving what I do. I love what I do. I like the time off. You know, I talk to some managers like, July 20th in a normal year, I'm like, hey, how's it going? They're like, oh, I'm up to my ears in arbitration cases. And, mm-hmm. you know, we're just going through free agency. They get about, it seems like, I don't know, what do they get? 10 days off? You know, it's like, problem. It's not like they're on an easy schedule. And we've got lots with our boys. They're both soccer players and, you know, and we have a busy life. So
they're not hockey players?
No, soccer players, both of them.
Okay. We have to explain that.
Well, you know what? Our Riley, our 14-year-old, played. And then I think honestly, there's a lot of people that like always, and like they talked about his draft year the minute he was born. I mean, so like there was a lot of people that put a lot of emphasis on hockey. And I think he had his own personality and was like, I'm going to choose soccer over hockey at one point when it was getting, say, in BC here, British Columbia, this soccer and hockey are in the same season. So he mm-hmm. couldn't do both at one point. So he ended up choosing soccer and we were happy with that. We became fans of soccer. We learned the game a little bit. We watched the Whitecaps when they are up and running and playing, and it's been fun for us. And then our little one really wanted to play hockey, and he must have asked for 2 years straight. And it was just, there was so much going on that we just couldn't get him out on the ice. And so they're both soccer players, and that's it. You know, we're happy with it. We're not, we want our kids to be what they want to be. So
I'm going to tell you, this is how much we've learned about, well, me, I've learned about soccer. So Riley was probably, I don't know, 10. He's now 14, maybe younger than that, 9. They were in this tournament and he was playing up top, like as a striker. So they've got a lead late in the game. We're standing right on the sidelines, as soccer parents do. And there's a ball in the corner in the other team's end. And I yelled to Riley, hunt it, you know, chase the ball, get on it. He doesn't even listen. He doesn't look at us. He doesn't do anything. He just does his thing. Game's over. They win. We're driving back home. And he says, you know, Dad, I heard you yell, hunt it, you know, for me to go get the ball. But if I run there and I don't get it, they pass it to the other side of the field. And then they have the whole far side of the field. My job's to keep the ball in that corner. And I said, you know what I'm going to do, Riley? I'm going to shut up and watch the game from now on. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. So we've learned it together. It's really enjoyable as they get older because it becomes real soccer instead of just kick the ball all over the place. It's really sure. fun.
Well, Ray was up early. He asked our youngest if he wanted to get up at 6 o'clock this morning to watch the game together. So yep. it's become a family thing. It really has. And it's been fun for us. We're big fans.
I want to get back to one thing you talked about earlier. You're talking about being on the ice and between the benches for games. Most broadcasters have never experienced that. And if you're calling a game, you're up high. If you're covering a game, you're up high in the press box. But the perspective that you guys would have from being between the benches on the ice surface is something you have lived. I'm wondering what you think a schlub like me, who hasn't played hockey since, you know, he was 12 years old, what would I see down there? And what would you see that would be different?
Well, I think a couple things right away that I think of course, it's because there's no glass in front of you. Mm-hmm. You'd feel the speed. Like you'd feel it when they go by you. And it would catch you. Like it that would be stunning. You hear collisions that you don't hear up top. Even a minor one, you hear like the gear come together. If the guys are close enough, you hear them like, ugh, you know, like you hear them, the noise. I always wear one earpiece down there. I don't like the double earpiece because then you can't hear anything.
Yeah.
But I wear one earpiece because I like to catch some of that. You'd see like, I catch like a, say if, I don't know, player A passes it to player B, I can catch the spin on the puck when you're down low. You can't see that up top. You can see it bounce. Things like that. There's a shot that'll go from the point and you know the goalie's screened because I can't see the goalie. Like I'm standing mm-hmm. right behind the shooter.
Well, exactly. Yeah.
And you're like, man, I can't even see the goalie. No wonder he didn't see the puck. He doesn't have a chance. But the one thing that I think is like outside of when the guys are yelling on the bench, if they're three or four guys down, that's about as far as you can hear. The rest of it's all just ambient
muffle
noise, whatever. What did you what do you think?
I found the roar of the crowd too, down by the ice, is a lot louder than when you're above. Like, it really, it's just in the intensity of it, that you feel immediately like you're almost in the game, because it's so fast. There's so much intensity, and it hits you. Like, you're down there and you're just like, I think you would find it so rejuvenating. It's like, whoa, like, this is, you don't realize when you're playing the game, it's different, but when you're down watching and you're seeing the speed, like Ray mentioned, come by you, and the collisions, and, you know, there's no glass right in front of you. So you're getting the wind, you're getting the cold, you're getting it all. You're hearing the referees, talk to the bench, and you have such a close eye. You feel like you're part of the game. And it's a really, I'm so fortunate that I got to experience that, because it is very unique. You can't get that anywhere else in the arena where you're sitting. So it was, it's pretty cool. He's been hit by a puck. I almost got hit by a puck at one point, but.
I got bonked on the head with a stick. That one didn't feel. This is one of my favorite interactions I heard on a bench. And it involves the late Brad McCrimmon, who was just an amazing person. But like, you hear the frustrations of the coaches and the players sometimes. And so I'm doing a game in Detroit, and Thomas Holmstrom's playing on a line with Henrik Zetterberg and Pavel Datsyuk. So of the players to be carrying the puck anywhere, it's not Holmstrom, right? Like,
sure,
just give the guys that can handle it, right? So Holmstrom carries the puck out of his zone and goes all the way to the far blue line. Datsyuk and Zetterberg are just skating up the ice. He loses the puck at the far blue line, and the other team comes down and gets a great scoring chance, and there's a whistle. And Mike Babcock's coaching, and he says to Brad, he's like, what? Basically, for Brad to talk to Holmstrom. He's like, what the hell is Holmstrom carrying the puck for? And Brad's like, I don't know. Like, what do you want me to tell you? So he goes down there and he says to Holmstrom, hey, Homer, you might want to, you know, move that over. And he said, I had lots of room. Like, he didn't see that it was the wrong play. He could have had room to Windsor, and it was the wrong thing for him to carry the puck. It was awesome.
I also found it interesting when, because you'd have the video in front of you, so you could see the replay, and it's before the guys had iPads, right? So at the arenas, there was no glass between you and the home bench. So I remember with one of the Avalanche defensemen leaning over and being like, he's watching himself on the replay, and he was asking me, and I'm talking, he's asking me a question, did I do whatever? And I'm like, this is awesome. Like, it was really, it was pretty cool, the interactions once in a while.
That reminded me of one. So we've got that monitor, and we're in LA, Vancouver's playing, and Alexander Edler has had a terrible first period. Like, one of those periods, no matter what you do, it's the wrong thing. So they're to my right, the visitor's bench. And so I'm doing a pack on Edler's first period, a highlight pack, at the start of the second. And so Edler, turns out the defense are going to sit right next to me, and Edler's the first guy out. And so he comes out, and I forget if it was Gord or Chris, throws it down to me. And just as he's throwing it down to me, Edler slides down the bench, like, slides down, and he looks, he goes, oh, what do you got? He goes, is that me? And he could see, because they're already flaunted up Alex Edler. And I said, yeah, it's not going to be good. I was so uncomfortable. I mean, he was sitting right there, and I'm like, oh yeah, look at this mistake. His stick broke. He's a minus. He's in the penalty box. He actually took a chuckle out of it too. So,
but you guys are, I mean, as former players, you're used to the perspective that you get from sitting at ice level and without glass in front of you. And it's an exciting view, I'm sure. But it's not one that allows you a whole lot of perspective on what is actually going on. How do you deal with that?
Well, for me, been incredibly lucky. Since I started going down between the benches, I've almost exclusively worked with Chris Cuthbert and Gord Miller. And they're two of the very best. Mm-hmm. So I never feel like if I miss something, say in the right corner, because it's all blocked out,
right,
I never really worry about it because Gord or Chris has it. And they know the game to make a comment that'll draw me in to that play. If you have somebody that doesn't know the game, perhaps that play might just become like a voiceover. and it just moves on. I honestly feel like I do a better job between the benches than I do up top. I feel really disconnected from the game up top. I feel like I can see the game down below, even though I know I miss a few things that I would get up top.
Yeah, I would agree.
Is that because you were on the bench so many years that that's how you watched the game?
Maybe. You know what? Sometimes there's a mistake made. I don't know what it is, but I know there was a mistake made because the play looks wrong.
Right.
It just doesn't look right. So when they show the highlight, and I don't know if enough guys really do this, guys or girls that are doing the analyst spot, I don't know that they watch the monitor, because a lot of times that's all you can pick up. Like, I'll catch a deflected shot, not in real time. I just know it was deflected because of the way the play looked. I can't tell you that it was, but what I watch on the monitor, that's like my confirmation point. And that's where I think I can grab a little more perspective as I'm doing the replays during the play. I think I can catch the flow pretty well. And it's probably, John, as you mentioned, just from sitting there for that many years.
Yeah. We've only got a few minutes left. I'd be remiss if we didn't talk a little bit about what's been going on. It is easy to look at the two series that are left and say, well, Vegas should beat Montreal and Tampa should beat the Islanders. And we do know that the Islanders are up a game. And we also know that last year in the bubble, they played in this same series, correct?
Yeah,
that's right.
And it was a pretty, we know Tampa Bay won, but it was not a walkover. It was a pretty tough series. Do you see, you can never know, but do you see upsets realistically in either of these two series? Cammy, do you first?
Well, it's funny because after the Islanders won last night, it was right.
Yeah.
Yep.
I was surprised. Tampa's just so strong. You just think they're going to roll over everybody. So no, the playoffs are unpredictable and anything can happen. So that's why I love the playoffs. And when a team gets rolling and you can sort of see them, going this way, trending this way, when you see a team go flat and you can see them trending down, you would never expect that team to maybe do that, go up or down. You might not, like, no one counted the Montreal Canadiens and look where they were. No one thought Winnipeg would get swept and look where they went. So I think that's what's great about the playoffs. That's what makes it so exciting. So I don't think you can predict. There might be a favor. You might say, well, Tampa's proven, but I don't think you
can. I think the point though to add to Cammy's is it happens so fast. Like Winnipeg sweeps out the Oilers, they're flying high. And in the first game, it's an absolute train wreck disaster for them. And they never recover. Boom, 7 days, finished. Thanks for coming.
Yep.
And so can there be upsets? I think absolutely. I look at Vegas and I just think they're too big, too fast, too deep for Montreal. That's my quick scan of that series. Yet I wouldn't have thought Montreal was going to get here. Yet if I go back 6 months ago, I thought Montreal and Toronto were head and shoulders the best teams in the North Division.
Right.
And then, so Marc Bergevin, in my opinion, went from general manager of the year to, geez, he might get fired, to general manager of the year. It's been a hell of a year for them.
Yeah, you're right.
I think Vegas is going to have too much for Montreal. I think the Islanders are like a pebble in your shoe that you can never, ever, ever get rid of. Barry Trotz is a master at getting his teams to connect to the way they want to play. And when I watch the Islanders, I'm like, their game's hard to play because it's all effort. It's physical. It's committed. And it's the same. They play the same game every night. Tampa's going to have to be really sharp. Of course they're down one. So now they're, they got to win 4 out of 6, but they're going to have to be sharp.
But don't you think though, that in game one, we watched Islander hockey. We never saw one breath of Tampa hockey. Islanders controlled every moment of tempo until that, you know, that power play goal in the last minute of the game.
Yeah, so I would caution, if for those that think, oh, look at this, the Islanders are going to run away or are going to roll over Tampa. Remember game one, Vegas, Colorado? They looked like they were in different leagues.
Yeah.
No, yeah. I mean, my point is Tampa can counter that. What they're going to have to be careful of, I've just noticed, I'm sure you guys did in the comments after, it was all about effort and puck management and puck safety. And Tampa's got to be careful that they don't dumb their game down to a point that they take away their own skill. Right. They have to play at a high tempo. They have to move the puck. They have to use their skill. But they can't turn it over like they did. I saw a stat yesterday, which I just couldn't believe, that the Islanders had 9 chances off the rush and Tampa had 0.
Wow.
Like, John, to your point, that is Islander hockey. They took the air and they smothered it. And there's one other thing. You guys have been in this building 100 times, but Tampa better win game 2, because going back to that little bandbox on Nassau it's going to be a madhouse. It's my favorite place I ever played at home was the Nassau Coliseum. The roof is about 3 feet above your head. The sound just bats around in there. That'll be a tough place to play.
Yeah.
Well, I think one of the things we've all learned is it's if you bet against Trotz and Lamoriello, you do so at your own peril.
Yeah.
Whatever they are, they know what they're doing. And you put those two together and it almost doesn't matter who the players are on the ice, I find. You know, they've got some talent.
I did have a theory about Kyle Palmieri. I'm curious. So Palmieri gets picked up by the Islanders.
Yeah.
So he comes to New York, scores 2 goals in 17 games. But when he came to New York, the first thing he had to do was shave his beard off for Lou's rules, right? Mm-hmm. No beard. Playoffs show up, beards are back. Palmieri can grow a beard in an afternoon, and now he's got 7 goals. I think there's a connection.
You think there's a connection?
Yeah.
Analysis right there.
I tell you what, doesn't get any better than that, Ray.
Before we go, I just want to say before to that comment of Ray's, I'll bet you $1 million Lamoriello does not change his beard rules as a result of Palmieri's performance.
Lou is 74. That rule is in for the next 20 years.
As long as he's there, that's the rule.
Yeah.
John, you want to?
Yeah. Before we go, I was there in Nagano, Kami, in 1998 when you won your gold medal. I was there the night you got inducted to the Hockey Hall of Fame. What's it like being an American living in Canada with all this Canadian Maple Leaf stuff? And you know, you've beaten them. You've got to be a proud American, but now you're living in Canada. Tell me what that's like.
Yeah, you know, at the beginning, it was quite interesting because crossing the border, there were a lot of, you know, Canadian border officials who are hockey fans, as you know, they would give me a little flack. And then when we lost in Salt Lake, everyone was all happy and it was all fine. And, you know, they never gave me any flack. And then I realized my value as an Olympian at home. There was always, can you come do this? Can you come do that? And we want you to speak to the kids and this. And when I came to Canada, no one could give about me as a player at all. Nobody. I was an American and I didn't have any importance. But to be serious about it, looking at the way the women's game is growing now, we are not defined by our country anymore. We're defined as women hockey players. And I think that's the greatest part we're seeing with the Canadian and Americans now. They're working together with the PWHPA as a whole group to try to grow the game. And so there is a general just acceptance of the fact that, like, if you're from the US, you can, like Kendall Coyne, after she skated the lap that heard around the world at the All-Star game, right? Mm-hmm. She went to Toronto and there was a little girl with the Kendall sign and she was like, she had stopped in her tracks and was like, what? Like, there's a sign for me in Canada? Like, it doesn't normally happen that way, but the game is growing now where you can have those appreciation for all women players. And we don't have to be defined just on our country. So I think that's great. But, being here, my teammates gave me a little flack because I started getting an accent after a while. It's all a big, it's banter, but You know, I have lived here 20 years. My kids are Canadian. My husband's Canadian. My stepkids are Canadian. Like it's, you know, it's all good. I don't see the rivalry. You know, I can take the rivalry and just keep it on the ice and off ice, you know.
I'm only great. For like 17 days in Beijing, right?
Yes, that's right.
There has been, it's funny though, because when the kids were little, they would cheer pretty loudly for Canada. And, you know, Cammy's from the U.S. And so it was a very funny dynamic to watch, you know, just the kids want Canada. They got the little Canada flag on their cheeks and wave their flag.
Well, at the World Juniors, I had to allow my kids had the Canada jerseys and I'm sitting next to them in my red and blue, like whatever, when they're playing the U.S. Canada. And I had to, and they were like, why aren't you cheering for Canada? I'm like, well, why aren't you cheering for the U.S.? And it was just like.
And of course, it didn't help 2010, you know, when the Olympics are in town. Yeah. And those games were as.
That was a cool Olympics because Ray and I literally worked about 10 rows right. from each other. It was so right. cool. We were both working yeah. at Olympics and I was working in the Rogers Arena in a suite and he was yeah. covering the men's games. I was covering the women's games via, they were at the other arena. At the same yep. time, Ray's working a game 4 rows below me or 5 rows below. It's so cool.
Let me give you one quick thing about that, about the chaos of sometimes how our lives intersect with hockey and all that. So I'm doing the men's games. She's doing the studio at the arena. We're living downtown at the time. I don't know how far, 10 blocks?
Yeah.
10 blocks from the rink. We've got a brand new baby. So we've got a 3-year-old and a brand new baby. Between games, she's racing home to look after the baby, fixing him all up and racing back to the rink. Her sister has come and stayed with us at this time, who is just a godsend. She's looking after everything at this time. I actually get a room at the hotel because I got to sleep. Like the house is a bedlam.
It was awesome.
It was unbelievable.
That was a lot of fun having it right here in our backyard.
Oh, it was something. It was sure something. Bob and I had a good time too. Right, Bob?
As best I can recall, John, yes.
There was a little bit of that around, I think, too.
Oh my God, that was a fun time. I think we'll all remember those Olympics for as long.
Well, that's when Bob became Rene Fissell's best friend.
We crashed his party. If I
remember. So the day before the games are about to start, Ray, I'll tell this story quickly. Well, we don't have time. We got lots of time. The day before the games are about to start, Bob says, what should we do? I said, well, let's go down and scout where we're going to do the show from. So we walked down to Molson Hockey House, which is across the street from the arena.
From the arena, yeah.
And there's a huge contingent of guys in suits and ties at Molson Hockey House. And I mean, I've been to seven or eight Olympics and I've done, you know, big events and I'd worked for the league. So I recognize about 80% of the people. So Bob says, well, we got to go. I said, there's no way we're leaving. We're staying. I said, watch this. So I said, I walked up to somebody and I said, what's going on? He says, oh, it's Rene Fissell's birthday. I said, well, great, Bob, we're going. So we walk right in. I wave. I said, hey, how you doing, guys? Hey, John, how are you? Walked right in, sat at the table. Bob and I had lunch. Rene Fissell's birthday.
Yeah.
Now you and just
didn't bring him a present.
No, just pretend you know where you're going, right?
Pretend you know where you're going. That's yeah. right. And so that became the crux of the first week of conversations. Well, when I was with Rene Fissell at his birthday party.
Well, when in Rome.
That's right.
This was a most enjoyable time. I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did, and I think John did. We'll give it a little time, but somewhere down the road, we'd love to do it again if you guys are willing. Sure. Thank you so much for this.
Once the Kraken get up and running, you betcha.
You betcha.
Absolutely. And awesome. The border
Thanks
open.
For having us on, guys.
Thank you, Ray. Thank you, Cammy. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you. Have a great day, guys.
Back after these messages. And we are back, and again, our thanks to Ray Ferrara from TSN, Cammy Granato of the Seattle Kraken. for joining us. And
could you imagine the arguments they would have over hockey? It would be that would be good. You know, because neither is short on opinion, as you could tell.
No, and I mean, two high level athletes that both played the same sport, that probably think they know more than the other one. Like, I'm wondering how many television sets they have, and how many times they sit down and watch games together, or whether they sit in different rooms and watch different games because their agendas are different. You know,
yeah,
there's all kinds of things we could have got into that we didn't. Maybe we should have.
Well, let's have them back.
We will do that. And speaking of back, that's where we'll be tomorrow. We hope
you know who's on tomorrow.
Join us. I should, but I don't.
James Hinchcliffe.
Oh, motor car racer.
Yeah.
Well, it'd be nice to see him again. It's been a while since I talked to him.
James. I told him he could wear anything with logos.
I've seen him in both. He used to show up in the studio every once in a while in complete regalia, and occasionally he would come in civvies. Although there was usually a logo even on the civvies. Anyway, Hinch, tomorrow. Look forward to it. Thank you, John.
Yes, sir.
Thank you all for watching or listening. We'll catch you later. Goodbye, everybody.